WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives. One moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Devine, could you just describe for us some of the roles you've been in films to help acquaint the audience who hasn't seen you?
Well, I usually played a very glamorous, bitchy type of female character, but then we went away from that in a different direction in the last film that we did, Polyester, where I played a complete victim, a nerd, whatever you want to call it, completely the exact opposite of the parts I usually play.
In films, you always play the part of a woman. Do you think of yourself as a transvestite?
No, not at all. A transvestite, I think the definition is someone that lives in drag or gets off sexually on drag. And that's strictly my work clothes, female attire. But what was the first part of the question?
That was the first part. If you thought of yourself as a transvestite.
No, not at all, no.
When did you first dress in drag?
I don't think well, there were Beaux-Arts balls and things that we went to years ago, but I mean, seriously thinking about it, you know, I mean, it's sort of like I said, work with John and in the films, in the earlier films, Roman Candles and Eat Your Makeup and the Diane Lake Letter story, all of, you know, all the films.
What was your image like to the people who knew you before you were on your way to becoming a star?
I get to my friends, I mean, I'm one of their friends. I mean, someone that I hope they always thought was very likable and funny, and we always had a good time. I used to love to entertain them, and
with what?
Well, we give lavish parties and things and charge it all to my father or write bad checks for it or whatever, you know. You can read about those things in John's book, I think, that covers some of those in there. But no, I did. I loved, I don't know who I thought I was or what I was doing at the time, but I did love to entertain my friends and have lavish dinner parties and things. By lavish, I mean we'd have like 8 courses and I would, you know, have it all done out. It was fun. And that thing they really appreciated. They didn't care how it came about or anything, but I think they enjoyed it. And we all had a good time. That was the main thing. We had a wonderful time growing up.
What was the first women's outfits that you used for your performances or whatever?
Well, there was my favorite one. No, I don't remember. For the films... God, the very first one I think we had, my psychiatrist lover made for me, and it was a gold lamé, and it was a pair of slack. No, that's not even the first one. Yeah, the first one was the Jackie Kennedy, a pink. I'm sure hers was wool. She had a pink Chanel suit trimmed in navy blue. Mine was pink flannel with a black flannel trim, and... had the pillbox hat and the skirt, and a woman that lived out in the suburbs named Mrs. Meister made that. And then I remember having it in the house in the basement and had blood all over it and everything from the assassination scene. And my mother found it and said, "Where did you wear this? What is this?" She couldn't believe it. And then after that, I think the next one was the gold lamé Toreadors and a halter top that tied in the front. But the pants kept falling down because it wasn't made right or whatever, or my behind wasn't big enough to hold it up. But so all through, that was Mondo Trasho. All through that, I was continued pulling the dress, pants up. We didn't have any money to work with in those days. So, I mean, you got what you could get together, but, you know, made it look as good as you could.
Do you ever shop in stores, or are your clothes always made for you?
Well, for the movies or personally?
For the movies in your club act.
Well, for my club act and things, no, they're all made. And but for the movie, I think Van Smith usually designs everything and has it made up for everybody, but a lot of it is shopped too. And I think I had a few things that were shopped in the last film, you know, shoes and a couple of lovely polyester outfits that he couldn't pass up.
You were Devine before you started doing movies, right?
Little Baby Devine, no. John gave me that name.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So that's when the persona developed?
Yeah, with the first movies, he gave me the name Divine, and it was strange then to hear it, but now it's strange to hear anyone call me anything else.
What was your original name?
Glenn.
Do you ever call yourself that now?
No, I don't think it fits anymore. Not that I think I am divine, the way I rant about it in the films and things. It's just a name like Glenn or Bob or Jack or Joe. I mean, it feels comfortable now.
Have you changed it on your birth certificate and records?
Oh, and some, yes. Yeah.
So you can legally be called that?
Yeah.
Do you see your weight and your body differently now that it's become part of your performance?
Oh, well, the weight varies so much and goes up and down all the time. I mean, not that I go from 100 pounds to 400 or anything, but I mean, it does fluctuate within 100 pounds sometimes. It's phenomenal. When I'm not working, it really skyrockets because I just sit and eat all day and then and nibble, you know. When I'm working, though, I have other things to do, so it doesn't matter so much. So it makes a big difference. But I have to keep it a certain way because when John started me out on this whole thing, the whole image was, I mean, I just don't walk out onto the stage and grace the audience with my presence, you know. It's how you start out that's how you're going to end up, what you're going to end up doing for the rest of your life, which I didn't realize in the beginning, or I would have just walked out on the stage. But now they want to see me run on stage and jump all around and be crazy. Well, that takes a lot of energy to do that, you know. So I have to keep the weight down to a certain point or it's just I can't. It's just uncomfortable and I can't breathe. And, you know, but...
But your weight's become part of your trademark. Of course, when you're younger and you're not famous and you're in school, it's usually considered a real disadvantage and people tend to make fun of you.
Oh, yeah, it was horrible in school. I mean, nobody liked me, you know, and all that because you're fat. And, yeah, it was very fashionable to be thin. And now it's funny because I see some of the same people and they're fans, you know. They really don't know who I am, I don't think. Maybe some of them do. But people that hated me at one time, but now they're fans, and it's still the same person, you know. It's just I have a dress on and a big blonde wig. But it's strange.
Do you ever have revenge fantasies?
No, not new. I think I probably had in the past. You know, there were one person in particular I want him. What he put me through, and sure, you have revenge fantasies about some people. But over the years, you sort of forget.
When you first started to perform roles of women, did you need to, like, study, or did you already know from watching lots of movies what certain gestures were that you'd need to use or how to walk when you're wearing a dress?
No, I mean, I did watch a lot of films and a lot of television when I was growing up because that was the whole, you know, thing then. No, but I've never tried to imitate or impersonate any other woman in particular. I don't know. The whole image of divines, I mean, I don't really try to change at all. It's hard to explain. I don't really try and change me at all. I put on the costume and makeup and wig. But I guess some things do change, but I don't plan it that way. And then of the things that I do plan for a particular character, I mean, John, who is my director, will tell me, well, I want her to be this and that, you know, and to act like this or act like that. Well, sure, you change those things, but, I mean, there are just other things that just do happen. I mean, I feel it's just me with, like I said, with a costume on.
Well, who'd you think about for Polyester?
Well, Polyester had quite a few friends that I studied closely to play an alcoholic. But so that I didn't have to go far for that. And they all knew who they were, and I love them very much. But that was a challenge because for the first time, I didn't have the big wigs and the tight, you know, glossy costumes and things to depend on. I had to look... pretty bad, I thought, you know, but it was worth it. I mean, the reviews and things that I got were unbelievable, and then the films too. But I mean, the personal ones were unbelievable. I loved it. But they took looking like that. I think because the other look maybe was very hard. They couldn't see through that or see, you know, around that. It was just da-da, stop them right in their tracks.
Well, from Pink Flamingos, do your fans assume that you really are a filthy person?
I think some of them do. Sure. I think some of them think I'm exactly like that.
Do you do anything to try to disprove that when you meet someone? Or do you try to prove it for them?
Well, no, that's why. I mean, when I do certain personal appearances and things, I've stopped doing some in costume and stuff like that so they can see the real me or, you know, or do a television show or something. Because it can make your life more difficult, you know, because they do think that, sure.
Are there crazy
They think Edith
people,
is your mother, and my mother, and we live in this trailer. And I've had to remind people, hey, this is only a film, you know.
Do crazy people ever hang around your house to snap your photograph out of character?
When I lived and when I'm in New York, that happens sometimes, or in cities, yeah.
What kind of people follow you around?
What kind? Oh, it's unbelievable. It's no particular kind at all. It's any age group, man or woman or whatever. I've met 90-year-old women that said, oh, I really like your movie and your something. I think, well, I can't believe this woman would even know who I am. You know? But it's everyone. Sure.
What about your parents? What did they think when you started doing it?
Not much. They weren't very pleased at all. And there was a long part of my life for about, I think, for 10 years that we didn't speak or have any contact at all. And then I finally decided to stop being, not to be the stubborn one and to call them because they were very good to me and brought me up the best they knew how. And they were wonderful parents. And I felt that I was punishing them in a way, too, by not being in contact with him, and my father's very ill, and I wanted to talk to him. So I called them up, and I went to visit them, so we're all friends again. Now they think it's wonderful. They have all of my clippings, they saved over the years, even when we weren't speaking. And they had their own little fan club there. I mean, when I came home, they had a sign on the door, you know, welcome home, Divine, and a big cake, It was very sweet and very funny at the same time.
Was it hard to get them to call you Divine instead of Glenn?
No, not really. My mother went to the theater in Fort Lauderdale or Miami or one of the, they live in Florida. And went to the movie. I think it was Female Trouble, the man at the door said, lady, you don't want to see this movie. She said, I am Divine's mother, and I want to see this film. And she and some of her girlfriends went with her. But she was signing autographs out front, Divine's mother. You know, so she loved that. But it's
How
all
did
right.
she dress for it, I wonder?
Oh, I don't know, probably in a polyester pantsuit. You know, she says, got to be ready to go all the time. Can't have any wrinkles, you know.
You could probably go to a theater dressed as you are now and see Pink Flamingos and people wouldn't recognize you? Have you tried that?
No, they would.
They would?
I think maybe if I went dressed as Francine Fishpole, they wouldn't recognize me. I sort of, because that was the only time I've ever been in costume, and John can tell you, it was so funny. We were filming a scene in Polyester where there's an automobile accident, and Tab Hunter and I were standing alongside the road. And it was very cold, and he lent me his the big down jackets that people wear. And I had this down jacket on and a headscarf and this polyester pantsuit. And I was standing there, and all these people started to come over because they thought it was a real car accident. And Tav and I were standing there, and a lot of people recognized him, but nobody would even looked at me a second time. I looked like one of the other women that were standing there. It was just real funny. It was the costume. It really worked. It just blended right in.
What did that make you think? So many people are in that position of never getting noticed because they look plain.
Well, I think they don't want to be noticed, actually. I think they want to be one of the crowd or to blend in. Everyone is not an exhibitionist.
What kind of glamour do you like most on screen?
What I think is real glamour. I love a heavily painted movie star, and I mean, if it's a woman, you know, coiffed and painted and in a beautiful gown and jewels and furs and the whole thing, to me, that is a well, not that's not all it takes, but you know, a whole look for a glamorous. And if it's not an evening clothes, I mean, they can be glamorous in a pair of capri pants and a halter top or whatever, you know.
Which actresses do you think have achieved that the best?
Well, there aren't any anymore. That's why I had to start doing it, you know. But give them some glamour. Well, one of my favorites was always Elizabeth Taylor. I always thought she was the epitome of your movie star. She lived the life and looked the part. But now she's gotten, I don't care for her so much anymore. I like Joan Collins is one of my favorites now. But at the same time, you know, I think with that look comes sort of a bitchy personality, you know, at least on screen, that sort of personality.
Do you see your appearances as trashing that kind of glamour or being your tribute to that kind of glamour?
Well, in both. Both.
What part of you wants to trash it?
Well, and I think I'm doing both at the same time, you know. But I appreciate it. I mean, that's what I said. I grew up loving all of those movie stars, those women. Mine, I wasn't so much Betty Davis or Joan Crawford. They were before, you know, I didn't care so much about them. But like Anita Ekberg and Taylor and Lana Turner and Jane Mansfield and all of those were my favorites.
You don't wear any makeup when you're not performing.
No.
Who does your makeup? Do you ever do your own makeup or hair when?
No, not if I can help it. I don't know what I'd look like. I've done it a couple of times when I had to, and it was disastrous. Van Smith designed the whole look of Divine, and John came up with the name, and we all worked on the image together. But it was mostly through John and Van that the whole look even came about. I mean, they picked out the costumes, and the two of them decided on how they wanted the overall look. I think it was like Jane Mansfield for some icing, that sort of look. But John always said the character of Divine was the Wicked Witch in The Wizard of Oz and the evil stepmother in Snow White, and Jane Mansfield for some icing.
How do you dress when you're you?
Well, at home, if I'm at home, T-shirts and pants, you know, drawstring pants, no shoes.
You know, it's kind of curious to me. When men perform in the roles of women, it's usually as a very glamorous kind of person as you do, but the men who do that wouldn't ever think of wearing makeup when they're not on stage.
Why? I mean, like I said, that's part of my costuming.
I get, well, that's it, because, okay,
part
here
part
we
of my
go.
Work. I mean, like, when I play nightclubs all the time, so when I want to go out, I don't want to go to a nightclub. Because I've had enough of that already. So, I mean, if I'm going to be at home, I don't want to sit around in a tight, uncomfortable dress and a hot wig and a whole face full of makeup
that's
that you
it,
can't
though.
Run
yeah.
your hand across your face.
Right,
you know?
But when it comes down to it, a woman off the stage is still expected to wear a lot of that. And a man off the stage, I mean, you're a man, why would you?
Well, but the woman doesn't have to. I mean, it's
right.
entirely up to her.
Yeah.
I mean, if she wants to go into that mold and to be that way, then, like I said, I think that's a personal... I'm sure there are many men... gay, straight, or otherwise, that sit around with a lot of makeup on all day, too. You know, that man tan and everything. Shocking looking, some of them. But you know.
Do you think there's a difference in the way men and women relate to your act and to your persona?
At times. It depends on the crowd. It depends on where you're playing and all of that. I mean, sometimes I've had women... I mean, luckily I never have any trouble from any women's groups or anything. Well, I'm not trying to make fun, or I'm not trying to, you know, suggest that I am a woman, because I'm not and I don't want to be, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, I forgot what we were talking about.
Oh, if you think men and women relate differently to your divine persona.
Yeah, it's, that's why I said it depends on where you are, you know, and the type of people you're with. I've played clubs, and I've had an obviously straight man come on to me, right? And I say, hey, you know, it's not what you think, and, you know, I know you're a little drunk or whatever, and your wife is right over there, so why don't you go back? No, come on and dance with me, baby, or something like this. And he's like, shh, give me a break, you know. And that was like a 40-year-old man. You know, I mean, a good-looking executive type, you know, out with his wife and friends for the evening. And then I've had women come on to me, you know, gay women, and then I've had women just that didn't like me at all. Whether I was a woman or a man or whatever I was, they just hated me because it was just this big thing over in the corner that was, you know, not making her life any easier for some reason. I don't know. People take me personally at times, you know, because I take up a lot of room, I think. But, and then, I mean, even when I'm out of costume, I get those reactions too. You know, people burst out laughing right in my face at times, you know. It just depends.
What do you do when that happens?
Well, what are you going to just keep on going, you know? I've sort of gotten used to it over the years. I must admit at times it does hurt your feelings or it does get to you, you know, because I am, after all, a human being. And I just don't know how people raise, not even to get it, but how do they raise their children to be so rude? You know, I was brought up too. I'm supposed to be one of the filthiest people in the world or something. I would no sooner go out and laugh at a crippled person or a blind person or a fat person. Why? You know? And then these kids, and they learn it from their parents.
Oh, some people would say they learn it from your movies.
Oh, that's different. You know? That's a different type of humor. Yeah, they're laughing at us because we're doing things because we want them to, you know.
Probably the filthiest
exploring
thing.
Ourselves, exhibiting ourselves.
The filthiest thing you've done on film, and perhaps that anybody's done on film, is the end of Pink Flamingos, where you eat the dog turd.
Well, I didn't really eat it. I
squished
put it in my
between
mouth
your teeth
and gushed it a little bit and spit it out. I think you have to swallow in order eating. Swallow, right? It's all the same thing.
You spit it out.
Hold it in there. Hold it in there. I'm getting another shot. I thought, toy hooey. No way. Usually I do as many takes as you want, but not that time. And one friend of ours got completely hysterical. I think she lost it for about 5 minutes. She could not stop laughing. She was hysterical.
How did you prepare yourself for that?
I didn't believe him, number one. I thought he was kidding. Because he is a jokester at times. I don't know if he likes to be called that, but he's very funny and witty. And had asked me a year in advance, you know, would you just, oh, sure, sure. I'm game. I'll try anything, you know. And he helped me do that. And a year later, I remember because he had asked Mink if she would set her hair on fire. And she had said yes. We all just agreed to anything. But when it came down to it, he went out and bought her a wig and everything. And she said, you really want me to set my hair on fire? He said, well, you told me you would a year ago. But she wouldn't. I thought, well, I'm not going to let him down. But then the day that we were filming that, Van was doing my makeup and was doing my lipstick and started burst out laughing. He said, I can't believe I'm painting this mouth that's going to go out there later, you know. And then it hit me. I thought, he is serious about this, isn't he? And I followed that dog around for about 3 hours, you know, zoomed in there. It was quite a day, but I mean, I really didn't prepare myself in any way. I was sort of stunned and shocked by the whole thing, because nothing came out the way it was supposed to either, the way I had pictured it. It wasn't what I had pictured. The whole day was completely bizarre.
Did you throw up?
No, I gagged a couple times. Vivid detail. But no, I didn't. It didn't affect me that much until I got home, and the people I was staying with went, oh, well, he was like the you know, the daughter of darkness, this person I lived with, you know, Sisters of Gloom. I mean, every word out of his mouth was, oh, you're sitting there dying right in front of me right now. So what is wrong, you know? And so I called. Well, I've told that story so many times. I called the hospital and asked for the poisons division and told them, you know, that, about the whole incident. And that was very bizarre, too. But then they told me that I had the white worm, you know, that I... But, I mean, nothing ever happened. I was all right.
Does the taste of that ever come back to haunt you?
No, I can't remember what it tastes like.
Tofu.
Yeah. It tastes better than chickpeas. But I don't know.
Tell us about the...
I sort of blocked it while I was doing it. You know?
Method acting.
Yeah, I did do method acting that day.
We'll be meeting John Waters in just a minute. Do you want to tell us about a little bit about your club act and about the book that you have coming out?
Well, I have a club act that sort of came about by itself. Well, no, we helped. Just through the records that I've been doing. I did one about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, called Born to be Cheap and the Name Game. And so I sort of traveled around the country doing those two and telling jokes or whatever. Then I was approached by another record company and cut a couple more records. Now I have 7 songs in all, and I'm going in the studio next Monday to cut a new one to take back to Europe at the end of the month, because I have a new album that just came out there, and it just came out here on the 28th of January, called Jungle Jezebel, Divine is Jungle Jezebel or whatever. And that has, I think, 8 cuts on it. And I heard it just went, Shoot Your Shot is one of the songs on there, just went gold in Holland. So I think I'm going over to get a gold record there, which I can't believe. I'll believe it when I see it. But that's all been exciting. And another part to the career, which I'd never even thought about, or, you know, it just sort of happened. But it's been a lot of fun. And then I have a, so I'll be appearing at a club here, Rainbows, Saturday night around midnight, I think, tomorrow night.
And tonight you'll be
at
the...
I'm in Atlantic City tonight.
And John Waters will be at the Theater of the Living
Arts
tonight.
He'll be at the theater tonight, and I'll be at the
theater
tomorrow night.
You'll be at the theater tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I have a Paper Doll book coming out that Van Smith, who's done the films and all the costumes, he designed all the Paper Doll clothes. So you can dress divine.
Let's introduce John Waters. And a retrospective of John Waters' films is showing this week at the Theater of the Living Arts. And is everything that Divine said about you during this past interview true?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think I didn't leap out of my seat sitting here. I think when Divine said that when the whole career started out, it was kind of like we were just making movies, like home movies for each other. And I think I had a little more confidence in it than Divine did at the time. I kept saying, you know, let's go to California, do this kind of thing.
Yeah. What did you do to get publicity at the beginning?
Well, in the very beginning, I remember we used to hand out flyers all the time. We had no money for advertising to push it. We used to walk in restaurants and give what we called the plate job, which put a flyer right while people were eating their food. It was the rudest thing, but we figured they have to read it. And then with Eat Your Makeup, we walked down the street with candy lipsticks and gave them out to people. When Pink Flamingos opened in New York, and Divine hated this, I know, but I made him ride the subways and everything dressed as the character to make sure that the word of mouth started spreading that Divine was in New York, and it worked.
What kind of reaction did
you? It was like being a politician, you know, a grassroots
work.
Yeah, I saw Divine actually cause a car accident walking down the street. The guy was looking over watching and smashed right into another car, and we just kept on going. That's the kind of publicity stunt shows. And the whole thing you're saying about the end of Pink Flamingos, that was our greatest publicity stunt.
Uh-huh.
Because that's all it was we had no money to make a movie. I wanted to do something that people would have to, they might hate it, but they would have to talk about it. And it worked beyond our wildest dreams.
Is your film circle starting to intersect with Hollywood, established Hollywood type film circles?
Well, I tried. There was one book I read called A Confederacy of Dunces, which was the first thing I ever read that I wanted to make the film of. And it was a Hollywood film, and I went to Hollywood twice to try to get it, and I didn't get it. That was the first time there was something, a Hollywood film, I really wanted to direct.
Are you starting to hang out with Hollywood types?
Well, I lived out there for about 6 years, so I mean, I did meet a lot of people in the industry and a lot of actors and producers and people. But
Too many gold chains for us.
Yeah, but it's really... I wasn't comfortable there so much. I mean, I still have friends that live there, and I have been considered for a couple roles in a couple of Hollywood films, but I've never gotten them.
What kind of reception do you get from Hollywood people?
Well, fear. Nausea.
Yeah, but from a lot of the actors that I met, they love the films, and then they love my work, and usually I think people in the business are fans, you know.
They're fans, but they... from a distance.
Yeah.
They really like the films. They really like what we're doing. However, they're only interested in making a film that's going to gross $40 million.
Exactly.
So you could be at the party, but not if it's going to affect the movie.
Well, they're not going to give us $40 million to make a movie is what it boils down to.
Right. What do you think of Tootsie, in which Dustin Hoffman gets to dress as a woman?
I liked it okay. I didn't think it was great or terrible. I hated the end when they have to explain it to you in case, like, you're too stupid to understand what the message of the movie is. It was a little too preachy for me. But I thought Dustin Hoffman was funny in it.
Oh, he was real good, yeah.
But it's different because Dustin Hoffman is a known heterosexual man, so it's safe. Divine is scarier to the American public.
You think that's true, Divine?
Oh, yeah. That's sort of aggravating in a way, but
would you have liked to play that role?
No, not so much.
What critique would you give of Hoffman's performance?
Oh, I thought he was very good. You know, like I said, and well, he was very good, but I think then again, the men in La Cage were wonderful. I like the first one better than the second one, but I mean, there again, you know, heterosexual men, but really, really wonderful in the parts they played, I thought.
You're both making some money. I don't know how much from the movies. Do you have extravagances that you're starting to spend it now, or things that you've always wanted to do with
My one extravagance is I buy every book I want that comes out. That's my one extravagance.
What about you, Divine?
I don't have any one particular extravagance.
Many?
Divine gave me a beautiful cashmere blanket for Christmas. That was quite extravagant, I thought.
Well, I love to shop in general. I can tear through a store. I love having... and believe me, not rich, but finally having enough money that you can go shopping or do what you want to do once in a while, you know.
Would you want to live in, like, the Hollywood Hills or anything like that?
No. I've stayed in houses out there and lived out there. And so, I mean, sort of had my fill of that particular L.A. I mean, everything's too far away from me. That's why I'm living in Key West right now, which is real nice to in between travels, to go someplace where it's warm and the water. Mm. I love the water, to swim and things. But I think I sort of miss I miss Baltimore and that hometown closeness and friends and families and things. I would like to get back to that, I think.
What's your favorite movies from
this year?
Well, from this year and then from, like, film in general.
Well, my favorite all-time movies are The Wizard of Oz and Russ Meyer's Faster, Pussycat, Kill, Kill. And lately, I've been really jealous of the man that made all the Francis the Talking Mule movies. I'd love to make a kid's movie for smart-aleck children that called Divine Meets Francis the Talking Mule. This year, I like Road Warrior a lot. I like Summer Lovers because it was almost impossible to watch. I like all the Fassbender's films. I like all kinds of films. Not one particular kind I like. My favorite comedies are unintentional ones.
Like what?
Well, The Other Side of Midnight. That kind of film. Mahogany. Once is Not Enough.
What about you? Do you see many movies?
No. No, I don't see a lot of them.
I'm surprised.
Well, no, I'm traveling most of the time, and you just see hotel rooms and a bed, and you go to sleep and get up. And when you're doing two, you know, shows a night sometimes, one at 12 and one at 2 and 30 in the morning, and... So, and Key West really isn't a movie town. The movie theaters are quite far from where I live, actually. So
I go almost every day.
To the movies?
I go see almost everything. I mean, I'll draw the line, something like, Yes, Giorgio, I missed. But generally, I go see most everything.
You still love films, even though... Because some people, once they start doing something professionally, whether it's films or music...
No, I think it's important for me to go and see everything. Oh, I mean, it's...
I love
I like the ritual of going to the movies. That's why I hate all this video stuff. I mean, I'm a hypocrite. I'll cash the check when we sell the film to video. But I don't think it's a good idea to give somebody a film that they can watch over and over and over. It takes the magic away. It's like telling how you do a magic trick to somebody. And I think the dots are too big in video. I think it's ugly. I think it gives you gay cancer.
What kind of theaters do you like?
I like all kinds of theaters. I mean, I like, of course, the in L.A., the big movie palaces I like. I don't like suburban cinemas 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, when they all have very little screens. It looks like a puppet theater.
Oh, I hate those little TV screens.
And you can hear the other film. I never forget when I saw at a Twin Cinema, Earthquake was playing on the other side with Sensoround, and you could hear Sensoround all through, you know, something like a Fassbender film. Of course, I love Sensoround. I thought that was a great gimmick.
Are you working on another film yet?
Yeah, I'm writing two scripts now. One is sort of like my old films, like a very crazy kind of film, and the other one is sort of my idea of whatever commercial is, which is very hard to tell these days when something like Friday the 13th Part 3, which was a total gore movie, was the number one film in America one week. What's commercial these days is, I think people's sense of humor is getting much better than it used to be. The only thing that I'm tired of is movies that are preachy and overly socially redeeming.
And there are many of those.
Oh, God. And everything is so safe now. The movies are like computers wrote them. They've all been done through market research, and that's why this Christmas batch of movies, to me, was just not awful. I didn't think they were terrible movies, and I think they were just the most average movies I've ever seen in my life.
How's anyone going to out-filthy you in their films?
Well, I'm not out-filthy. I'm even getting away from it. I mean, Polyester was, like, R-rated, because I don't want to keep trying to top something that I did to start out with to get people's attention and to make people laugh. I think many of the films that the school of like films like Caddyshack and Animal House, I'm not fans of them. I think they're sort of bad taste. I don't think they're really that funny. Like Porky's, to me, was offensive, I thought.
Mm-hmm. What's offensive? So what's offensive by that about that? So people can distinguish between what you...
Well, because there was no wit involved in it. It was just crude without being funny. I mean, people laugh, I hope, in my films. They may be at crude things, but they're also laughing with them as because they're laughing at things that basically they're nervous about. They have anxiety about. And I'm trying to get people to laugh at things that they're uptight about. It's the first way to get rid of fears is to be able to laugh. But Porky's was like one long whoopee cushion.
What roles would you most like to play, Devine, that you haven't had the chance to do yet?
Gandhi. He would have been great as Gandhi.
Gandhi,
I think.
Yes. I don't know. I've always wanted to do a costume epic sort of film. No particular role. I mean, I've never died to play Cleopatra or anything, but I would like to do a costumey type movie sometime. I always thought they were fun. They were my favorite when I was a kid. The Roman epics and Egyptians and Knights of the Round Table and Marie Antoinette movie, all those, you know.
Would you want to direct one like that, John?
Well, I don't like period movies. In a way, all my movies have been costume dramas. The Pink Flamingos and Females of Trouble, you certainly wore some get-ups in that.
Well, no, I'm in more of a period.
Yeah. It's so much trouble, because then you have to worry about being truly authentic and all that. And reality is not my forte.
Well, being authentic wouldn't bother you, Devine, would it?
Oh, no. I didn't mean it had to be realistic.
It didn't bother the people who made the movies before.
Only if I could get Victor Mature to star with Devine would I consider making a great Egyptian epic.
Is there a leading man or woman you'd like to play opposite?
I don't know. No, see, I've never thought about this thing. I never thought it possible. I mean, when Tab Hunter walked through the door, I mean, that was floored me right there. I couldn't believe that I was co-starring in a film with him.
What was your chemistry like?
Well, I think we worked very well together, and I think it came across very well on the screen, because that's where it does finally show up, because it always does show up. I think you can tell on the screen or on the stage if people get along when they're working together and things and how well they work together. But he was great to work with. I mean, I've been praising him, like his agent at times. He taught me things and showed me different things that, of course, he's learned in making 42 movies or something mm-hmm. to my... seven or however many it's been, but
really Tab was in awe of Devine, I think.
At times.
I mean favorably, I mean that.
But it was great to work with him.
Have you auditioned for other people's films?
Well, I was up for a couple of Hollywood films, and I did I read for the director. But like I said, I didn't get them. So, of course, it was very disappointing and a blow to the ego, but, you know, you come back.
John, I think I asked you this a year ago when you were living in Baltimore, which I think you're still living
in. Oh, yeah.
In. Mm-hmm. Why are you still living there?
Well, there's no reason not to. It's my home. Things have worked living there. Why change? I mean, I'm away half the year, as it is, and I like that feeling of going home to a place that's mine where nobody bothers me there. My oldest friends live there. I know the city well. And it's just very comfortable for me. And I get ideas there. I still think that Baltimore has citizens that are more bizarre than any other city. The other day I saw a perfect scene. A friend of mine was visiting me, and it was Christmas Eve. And we saw this scene, which sort of sums up why I stay in Baltimore. In the middle of a street was a blind man. And cars were slowing up because they thought he was smashing the cars with his cane. He obviously didn't get what he wanted for Christmas, but people couldn't believe it. People would get out of the car, and he's really, with a metal cane, smashing cars and screaming at him. And it really made me glad that I lived there when I saw this little just moment of history.
So some people, once they can have the mobility to do it, want to move to a place where you're really in the middle of what's happening.
Well, generally, you can live anywhere and make movies. I mean, my films are all distributed out of New York. We sold polyester to 32 countries. I mean, I've traveled all over Europe promoting them everywhere. So you get to go everywhere. It doesn't really matter where you live. And to be perfectly honest, it's become part of my act that I live there. That's what Fran Lebowitz said to me. She said, I could never quit smoking. You could never leave Baltimore, even if we wanted to. And in a way, she's right.
Is there something you couldn't do, Duane, that would fit in that pattern?
I think I'm moving back there. I miss it.
I want to thank you both a lot for talking.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. And enjoy your stays in Philadelphia. Thanks.
Yeah, I always do.